Nearly every podcast guest I have on at some point has this fear. What will people think of me? What if I say certain things? Will they judge me? Will they cancel me? In this podcast, that fear didn't come up too much. So we talked about religion, we talked about politics, we talked about Trump, and we talked about the corruption in South Africa and what it was like being a politician inside Joburg when the whole chaos was happening, where there was a transition of leadership and there's certain races that weren't as popular as others. And if you like polarizing, interesting conversations that can go anywhere and have no idea why it's going to go that way, well, here you go. Here's the podcast. Who were you from originally, my friend? Where were you born? South Africa. What year were you born in South Africa?
1969.
Jeez. What was it like? What's South Africa like back then? Like when you go to school?
Oh, I wouldn't know. It's just more, yeah. But it was quite, it would have been quite racially divided back in those days. It would have been apartheid, middle of the apartheid era.
Jeez. How long were you there till? What age did you leave South Africa?
I moved to New Zealand in 2002.
Yeah.
So I've been here 23 years now. Yeah.
Huh. Well, is it much different in South Africa? Like when you go to school, like what area were you from?
Yeah, so I was born in a city called Pinetown, which is just outside Durban. It was the main sort of city. It's probably about, I don't know, it's 20 kilometers from Durban. I don't know. It's almost, you know, these days it's almost the one big city. Yeah, so that's in Natal, which is on the coast, the east coast. Yeah, it's east coast of South Africa. And I was born there. And when I was about 1 year old, my parents moved to up north of Durban. It's about 2.5 hour drive north to a little town called Empangeni, which is in Zululand, in the heart of Zululand there. And then I grew up. I was there until about 12. And then at about 12, we moved to Johannesburg. Yeah. And I basically lived in the Johannesburg area until I left South Africa in 2002. Yeah.
Wow. I've heard Joburg's, you know, beautiful and also scary. Did you ever have some harrowing moments or questionable experiences while living in South Africa?
Yeah, I guess over the years various things happened. Not a lot directly to me. I mean, you know, my wife was nearly sort of attacked in the car and stuff like that. I personally never really felt too unsafe. We lived in a house with big, electric gates and electric fence and big walls. That's how you live in Johannesburg, really. Yeah. I don't know if I would call it a beautiful city. I mean, Johannesburg itself, I wouldn't describe as beautiful. But,
I have no idea, if I'm honest. I mean,
it's about 6 hours from the coast. It's in the middle of, it's quite an altitude. It's about 2,000 meters above sea level. No major rivers running through the city or anything like that. Quite a big city, I suppose, about 4 million people. There was probably about 4 million people at the time I left. Probably bigger than that now. But, South Africa, I mean, South Africa as a whole is quite beautiful, I guess. And it's got like, you know, lots of different things, you know, like lots of different sort of, variety, you know, you've got like your sort of tropical stuff, which is like Durban, where I came from, and that Natal, and that's very much like, I guess it'd be similar sort of climate to like Queensland, somewhere like that. So, and then you've got Cape Town, which is right down the south, the bottom. That's quite different again. I don't know what that would be similar to. Melbourne's climate, maybe, I don't know. And then you've got Joburg, which is quite unique. I mean, they would call that area the half belt because it's like sort of higher ground. It's like quite elevated above sea level. And you get very nice dry winters. And then in summer, I wouldn't say you wouldn't get rainy summers, but you would get like quite consistent weather in that. Like you'd have beautiful days in summer. And then almost every day, like clockwork, at about 4:30, clouds will come over and you'll get thunder showers and storms and thunder and lightning. And by 6 o'clock, it'll all clear up again and you'll have a beautiful evening. And that almost happens like clockwork in summer. And in winter, you hardly get any rain. You get exceptionally dry winters and all the grass dies and everything dies off. And, yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah. The different perspectives. Like, I mean, I used to have a teacher at school.
Yeah.
And he was in the special forces and they used to do this thing where they'd keep their head outside the tent and that they could not get ambushed. So you could like tap them on the head and wake them up without making noise. But sometimes, you know, hyena might grab them or something. You never heard of or seen either animal experiences or funny animal experiences or people?
Yeah, sort of. Like in a game park once, we were actually in a game park, you know, driving along, and we were driving up this sort of hill in this game park, and this car, which was about probably 200 or 300 meters ahead of us, suddenly started to reverse down the hill. Back, you know, coming, and so we were like, why is this car reversing? And next thing we see this elephant running down the road in front of the car over the hill. And this car just suddenly reversed, and this elephant was chasing this car down the hill. So all of us were like, quickly, I'm to reverse. Off the road. Yui, come on. So, yeah, it seemed like an elephant chasing car, so it's quite funny. Actually, a friend of mine, I wasn't involved with him, he was a game farm, and an actual lion came and bit his car. And he had lion teeth marks in his bumper, on his bumper, yeah. You could actually see the lion had bitten his bumper. Yeah, yeah.
So you don't have, like, baboons running through schools and stuff. It's pretty chill. All the animals are dead in Joburg, eh? They've been eaten.
Oh, in Joburg now, aren't you? Yeah, the only animals you find are ones with AK-47s and stuff.
what's the climate like? What made you leave was because I know there was a period of time where you had special visas for farmers in South Africa or something like that.
Was it South Africa or was it Zimbabwe? I don't know. But I just left because I didn't see a long-term future in South Africa. I didn't see a good political future there. I guess my in 2000 and when was it 2001 I became a city councillor in Johannesburg. Actually I was elected as a city councillor, and I had I think in my ward there were about 30,000 voters, which is more than the entire district of the Eastern Bay Plenty where I live now. This is my ward. And I think there were 400 odd city councillors in Johannesburg. So it was like big. It's bigger than New Zealand Parliament. And so it was quite interesting going to a and then I remember at my very first city council meeting. It was in 2001, and it was all the time when that high. It was at the peak of all the trouble that was happening in Zimbabwe at the time. And I think they were surrounding farms and killing farmers on their farms, and all sorts of things. And farmers were being driven off their farms in Zimbabwe. And there was a whole lot of allegations about Robert Mugabe rigging the elections. And, you know, there was also funny stuff going on in Zimbabwe. And I remember at our very first council meeting, we're sitting there, and the mayor of Johannesburg, I remember Amos Masondo at the time, and he stood up to give his opening address as the mayor of Johannesburg, and he said, "I would like to congratulate Robert Mugabe on a resounding victory in his general election, and for having the courage to stand up to Britain and Australia and America, who are trying to establish a new world order and all those kind of things." And I thought, "Oh my goodness me." And at the same time, there was a delegation from Cuba that was there, and they were all cheering up. And, yeah, And then and I thought, oh, okay, yeah, this isn't great.
Yeah, no.
No, it wasn't looking good. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, there was a lot of, you know, yeah, unfortunately, there was a lot of self-interest in I don't know. I just found that there wasn't necessary, a lot of corruption in a lot of respects, you know. I remember I was on a finance committee and I went to this finance meeting one day. And one of the things that we were discussing was the bus tariffs. And the bus tariffs, they wanted to put up the bus tariffs by 15% or something like that. But the problem that we experienced in the bus service was that there was a lot of corruption in there too. And bus drivers would take cash and not issue tickets, you know, book the cash. So what was happening is we had this idea that you would do cashless. There would be no more cash on the bus and you would have to get a smart card, and it would be a tiny smart card operated system, you know. And if they actually implemented that, the savings would be enough to actually reduce the bus fares, bus tariffs. And the argument was, well, back in 1992, and they were saying, yeah, back in 1991, they said, when you people, implying you white people, when you were running the city, you put up the bad bus tariffs by 20% in that year, so we can put them up now. You know, they weren't interested in trying to, yeah. So I thought, okay, there's no real commitment to actually resolving the problems. You know, it was all just, well, look back at the past, and then because you were white, you were blamed for everything that happened in the past. And it was, well, you know, I was a child in 1991. I didn't really have anything to do with the bus tariffs in 1991 or whatever, you know. And, you know, it was, yeah. And so it was a bit frustrating. And, you know, what was another? There was one. What was it again? Just slipped my mind. I was thinking of there was an incident. What was the situation?
Yeah, you saw you were talking to finance, and then you went to the bus.
Yeah. So it was that. But I was going to say, in my first year as being a councillor, I also remember all the council members voting to give themselves an 83% salary increase in the first year. So as a councillor, I got almost a double in my pay in the first 12 months of being a councillor. And at the same time, the council workers were striking to get a 7% increase. That they were, you know, and councillors gave themselves 83% increase at the same time. So, while the council workers couldn't even get 7%. So, yeah, it was a lot of I just still felt there was a lot of lack of commitment to actually addressing the issues, and people jumping on a bit of a gravy train and going, well, I don't know, I feel sorry for myself. Now I'm in a position I'll just grab power and, you know, not really an absolute commitment to really tackle the issues and address the issues. And then I think pretty much after my very first council meeting, I came home to my wife and I said, okay, that's it, re-immigrating. Because I thought, I'm not going to complain like everybody else. No, let me get involved and try and make a difference. And so that's why I went for it and became a councillor. Then I realized, well, I can't make any difference because I'm sort of I don't know, outnumbered enough. It was just frustrating. I thought, okay, that's it. And they kept saying, you know, if you said something that they maybe disagreed with or whatever, they would say, well, why don't you, I don't know whether I can swear on this podcast.
You can swear, you can say whatever. Yeah, it's fine.
Okay, they would say, well, why don't you fuck off back to Europe where you came from?
Ah, interesting. Oh, it's reversed.
Yeah, yeah. And leave Africa for the Africans. Yeah. So it was a bit like, oh, and then eventually I just said, okay, well, I believe New Zealand wants me. I'll go there then.
Yeah, to a lesser degree. we have our own dislike.
New Zealand has welcomed me with open arms, so I was like, okay, well, the issues in New Zealand are nothing like those issues, you know, really, where but anyway, but Yeah, so my initial thing was, well, you know, I'm not going to complain. I worked at this company in South Africa called Hideco, and it was basically we had a parent company in Holland, and most of the people who worked in our company were Dutch people, Dutch expatriates and stuff. And most of the other Dutch people love to complain. They say the British complain a lot, but I think the Dutch complain more. You know, they would complain about the country and that was going down. And I thought to myself, I'm not going to be like these old Dutch guys and complain and all that. You know, let me actually get involved and do something. That's why I went into politics and got into the council and got elected as a councillor. And that was a failure. So I thought, okay, well, try that, give it my best shot. I think I'll leave and go start a life somewhere else. I thought my family's going to be ultimately better off in the long term.
I'd be curious on the politics side because, you know, corruption seems to be a common thing. And I've only had a small taste of it where I worked with an ex-deputy prime minister. We don't need to say their name, but they were so believing of their own lies that they didn't even know they were lying.
Oh, really? Did you find that in New Zealand?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But like, we all have our own. Like, humans are quite easily corruptible and they can rationalize away evil. You know, like if they cause harm, I'm not saying this person was evil. They just lied and didn't make sense. But what do you think?
That person was evil, do you think?
No, not evil. Not evil. No. They lied and they believed it. And I was like, really? That doesn't really make sense. Come on.
They believed their own lies.
Yeah.
It's convinced themselves that. Yeah.
Well, the best lies.
I think a lot of politicians do that, though, don't they?
Why do you think? Know. What leads to either corruption and lies? Do you think in politicians?
I don't know. I guess it's who said it? Some famous person said, "Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely." Yeah, and then I guess people get on a bit of a power trip, eh? And people do all sorts of things, I guess, to be in a position of power and. And I suppose humans have a bit of tribalism. Eh? It's almost maybe evolutionary involved into us a little bit. You know, we stick to like sort of our in group and, you know, and that, I don't know, and maybe it's just coming from the way of survival. You know, we had to collaborate with whoever was in our group, and then, you know, if you were in the out group, they were the enemy, and, you know, I don't know. And I suppose maybe it's just an evolutionary thing, eh? Of how, yeah, and we try and justify things to ourselves, I suppose, eh? Because we try and make sense, and then we tell ourselves stories. And then, you know, and so. And then I suppose when we didn't have technology, we didn't have knowledge and stuff, we had to make stories for ourselves to explain, you know, the weather patterns, and, you know, and then when the storms came and lightning came, the gods were across, somebody had done something wrong. And when there was an earthquake, it was because the gods were mad or whatever. We didn't understand. So there was always a story behind what we didn't understand. And I suppose to some extent we do the same with politics in a more modern, you know, in a way. And we like to believe, probably just, I don't know, I suppose we like to believe what, you know, yeah, I don't know. Justify things to ourselves. Look at our Trump supporters. I don't know if you're a Trump supporter.
I don't mind them. I don't mind them.
Yeah.
You can shit on them if you want. I don't mind. What are you going to say about Trump supporters that they're so enraptured?
Like, you know, you ignore like a lot of the red flags there. You know, and you do well. You just believe the narrative and speak. You know. Yeah, but I suppose if you're a Trump supporter, you could say the same about the other side. I guess. You know, and it's all like. Yeah, and I suppose there's truth in good and bad on both sides. But yeah, but at the end of the day, I mean, as far as American politics goes, I don't think there's a good choice in America between. I think Trump might be a better option than Biden, to be honest.
Yeah.
The fact that I think Biden's too old and he's losing it.
Got dementia. Yeah.
Robert Downey Jr.
That's
it'll be the way to go, but nobody's going to vote for it because it's all along party lines. You know, you've got to be a Democrat or a Republican.
Robert Kennedy Jr. is what I meant to say.
Yeah, that would be the way to go. If I was an American, I had to vote, I'd probably do that. But but he won't get in.
It's wild, you know, what's going on.
Sorry?
It's wild what's going on with there seems to be a concerted effort to silence a certain type of person, you know, like if you like, even though you might not like Trump, and it, you know, I probably wouldn't be friends with him. He seems quite mean, and you know, he's entertaining for sure. But like, you think of the concerted effort to silence him and take him to court, and you know, even not to have people vote for him in the primary because he caused an insurrection, you know, like violent, which is a bit wild, you know what I mean? That's a bit of a stretch. But you got, if we talk about politics, it's risky. I don't give a fuck, but you might.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I don't know. I suppose he did cause an insurrection in a lot of respects. I mean, you know, he's the first president ever not to accept the outcome of a, and then all the false allegations that, you know, how many court cases did he take to court and he was proved wrong in every single case that they tried to prove, you know, vote rigging. So there was no vote rigging. So all those allegations were false. And then he did stir up the crowd to do what they did. And I mean, there's no doubt about that if you listen to his speech at the time or what he said. And then obviously, I mean, yeah, things suffered, people suffered. And yeah, I mean, and maybe some of those allegations against Trump are false, but a lot are true too. I mean, and there's some things that are, you know. I don't know. And funny enough, his biggest support base comes from the Christian right wing. And anything, and Trump's anything but a Christian right winger, really. You know, I don't think he's a man of God, faith or anything. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, maybe not in reality. Right. I think he goes to church and stuff, but I don't.
Yeah, I think he goes. Yeah, he goes to church, but
he's a ladies' man. I mean, but now he's married. Okay.
Look, I mean, I don't know, but I'm not a church-going person myself, so that's not the dumb thing about it. You know, I don't consider faith to be. I don't know what I can say on your podcast, but my personal belief
is just
faith. To me, faith is not a virtue. Faith, and I find that, you know, I find it actually strange that people would consider faith to be a virtue when, in actual fact, faith goes against everything we really should do, because faith is saying something to be true that you have no evidence is true. Well, now, if you apply faith, if I applied faith in my job, I would be a very bad mortgage broker. Well, because if I went to the bank and I said, please give this person a loan, and they said, well, on what evidence shall we give him a loan? And I said, well, just have faith, man. He's a good person. You know? And they'll pay the money back. Like, well, you know, if you're a juror and you said, I believe he's guilty. Well, why? No, I just have faith that he's guilty. I mean, just got that. You know? Or if you're a scientist, you said, but the aeroplane's going to fly. Well, just have faith that, well, you know, we haven't tested it yet. You know? But so, I mean, in every aspect of your life, faith is anything but a virtue. It's immoral, really. But yet when it comes to religion, suddenly you say, well, faith is not moral. It's a good thing. Well, how can that be? You know, because then people go, well, you know, no, but I believe in, it's like, okay, so I should believe in God. Okay, so which God should I believe in? Your God or the other God's God or the 10,000 gods? Which one do you? And they go, no, there's only one God. Oh, so you're actually also an atheist because you're an atheist to 9,999 gods. But, you know, there's one God you're not an atheist to. So just go one God further, you know, that's all.
It's interesting you say faith is immoral. I can see, you know, it believing in something with evidence not, that supports it. But what would you say, what's the counter argument? What do you think the value in having God in the world is? Do you think there is some value?
I think it played a role for our evolutionary mindset when we couldn't explain things, you know, and it was like, and it was a good way to control people and you didn't have technology or whatever, because, you know, you could tell them the whole story and all this, and you got to do good and you got to do, which is good from a moral perspective, because it helps people have a moral code and a reason to follow, you know. And then, of course, you can add another layer to it, because you go, well, this God who's watching you, he's actually not just all powerful and all knowing, you know. He's always all present as well. So even if you're alone in the room, God knows what you're doing. And he's watching you, and he knows what you're thinking. you know. So I mean, you've got a great way to control people, because then they've got this fear of, oh well, you know, this God is watching me, and you know. And I guess, I mean, for me, my personal philosophy would be that, you know, I think religion was invented as a good way to control people, you know. And probably as it now, I would say the human race has outgrown the need for religion, is my personal opinion. You know, if I'm not offending you or anything by your own personal beliefs, but I think that now that we can explain things, and we've got science, and we've got knowledge, and we've got education, and all these other things, you know, I don't know that religion plays as a vital role to play in society going forward, because, you know, we can certainly justify morals and have a good reason for moral. And I don't think there's anything, I don't think there's such a thing as absolute morality. You know, I think, because a lot of, you know, religious people might use the argument, well, if there's no God, how do you know what's right and wrong? But you do. Because, you know what's right and wrong, because the what's right is always what's best outcome for society in general, or for the most people in the most part, right? And what's going to have the best outcome on society. And what's not, what's going to be worse for the majority, or, you know, have the worst humanitarian outcome, is going to be the least moral, you know? But there's no absolutes necessarily, because, and there isn't even in religion, because even if you took Christianity, where Christians might argue about absolute morality, well, there isn't, because what was wrong in the Old Testament isn't so wrong in the New Testament. You know? Because if they still lived according to the Old Testament, we'd be stoning homosexuals and, you know, and adulterers and things. And we don't do that anymore, because now we know that's an immoral thing to do, you know? And, but yet, if you live by the Old Testament, it said, well, you know, put adulterers and fornicators and homosexuals and all that to death, you know. So, then the New Testament came along and they said, oh, no, that's okay, turn the other cheek and forgive. It was an eye for an eye, then it was forgive. So there's no absolute morality in Bible or scripture. So the argument for God having absolute morality, or it coming from God, I think morality is relative, and, you know, it comes from philosophy, and I think through thought and through ethics and through, you know, doing best for what's going to be the best outcome for the majority of people, you know, the majority of the time, that's what morality is all about, you know?
Yeah. I think for me, obviously, I'm atheist, but I'm glad God exists for other people, because there are examples of deprived people using religion as a justification for horrors, but I think they do that regardless.
They'd find another reason to do it, wouldn't they? Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the having an aspirational self that knows what you're doing at all times, in a way. Like, if you're a criminal that's lost hope and society's given up on you, and you use God as inspiration to be more than what you are.
Yeah.
There's some beauty in that.
Yeah, I have no argument that, and I 100% agree that religion has utility and utility for some people. I guess it's all individual. I mean, there's no utility anymore for me personally. But
did
I can
it used
understand
to?
Why for some people it would.
Did you change?
Actually, I was brought up religious.
Sound like it. Sound like there's more invested in this than just an opinion.
Yeah. And yourself, you probably weren't brought up religious, right?
No, my family were atheists, but I used to go to Sunday school for food, so I'd learn a bit about the Bible when I went in there.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But you see, so it's quite a bit of a different upbringing in a way, because when you're brought up with it and you're kind of told, and you know, South Africa, interestingly enough, is a far more religious society than New Zealand. New Zealand's much more secular, really. And interestingly enough, I mean, coming from South Africa, which was where probably a lot of South Africans would be more, you know, much higher percentage of the population would be churchgoers and ascribe to some sort of religion. It's not a more moral society, you know. It's got more violence, it's got more racism, it's got more corruption, it's got more of everything bad. You know, even though there's evidence again that morality doesn't come from religion. necessarily. You know? So and you're not going to have a better society. And actually, if you look at the whole world, you look at societies, those that are more secular are the ones who actually have the better outcomes and they actually have better social outcomes and social. Look at Western Europe compared to even America. America is probably the most religious Western country around, and yet it's got the highest crime rates, highest incarceration rates of people. It's got, you know, much more violent crime. It's got much bigger disparity of wealth. It's got, you know, so there you go. I mean, yeah, you don't get morality from religion, but yeah, I mean, I think it can have utility for certain people and can probably help them and give them inspiration. Yeah, I don't run around necessarily knocking everybody who's religious and putting them down.
Every time you get a knock at the door, you're like, get the fuck out.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I do tell Jehovah's Witnesses to bugger off and not face my.
I love them. But, they're interesting. Now,
but it's quite interesting. I mean, I was brought up religious, and then, what converted me? Probably about 10 years ago, I got into listening to a lot of podcasts and things. Well, not quite podcasts, but a lot of YouTube debates and things. Have you ever heard of Christopher Hitchens?
Yeah, good dude. Yeah, great debater.
He was really good. He died about 10 years back in 2000.
God
yeah,
got was him. Fantastic.
Yeah, God he got him. Yeah, and then, of course, there's Richard Dawkins. God hasn't got him yet. Yeah, he's still going.
They're both quite angry and unhappy, though, I would say.
Yeah, they are. And they're quite very passionate about the, but both are probably brought up in religious households, I guess. And then there's Sam Harris. Have you heard of him at all?
Yeah. I had his app for a while. Yeah. He was meditating to it.
Oh, yeah. He's good. Sam Harris. And then there was Daniel Dennett. It was the Four Horsemen of Atheism that I listened to quite a lot. And then their argument. And the argument that really got me was when one of them, who was it? I think it might have been Christopher Hitchens who argued how, you know, religion's actually immoral. And when once I got that concept that religion's actually, or faith itself, so not religion. Religion's not immoral, but faith is immoral, which religion's based on. That was when I just dropped religion. And I was like, oh, cool, I can get rid of this. Yeah.
Was there ever a point where you felt either life was so harrowing, it's hard to know that there's someone out there that's a God, or was there a reason that you gave up on God, or is it more just logical?
No, it was just logic. I just think I logic my way out of it, really. Richard Dawkins has written this book called Outgrowing God. But that's probably what I did. I outgrew God. You know? I'll tell you real as well. There's no utility in this for me anymore, and reason my way. I mean, there wasn't any particular incident where I like had some sort of a tragedy, and I thought, oh well, you know, look what God's done to me, and, you know, nothing like that.
What did God used to mean to you when you were younger? What was your relationship with God?
I guess I was brought up in quite a religious family. My mother, in particular, was very religious, and so I was brought up quite a bit with all that kind of like baggage in a way.
Were they nice people? Or did you have a good relationship with them? Or?
Yeah. I was very close with my mom actually, and my mom died when I was quite young. I was only 24 when she died, and that was quite tragic for me. And I was a lot closer to my mom than my dad. My dad was a believer, but he wasn't as religious. You know. He was probably like a Trump
Christian. You're talking about all the topics people tell you not to. I don't mind. Just let you know. Politics, religion.
Sorry, this is going to be, you might not be able to hear this podcast.
Oh, no, I always post it. It's always my guests that have a meltdown. No, not at all. We can step up. How many genders are there?
So it's quite controversial, I suppose.
Not at all.
Yeah, it's all the religious people are going to listen to your podcast are going to hate me. But
one before you has shoots guns and he's a pastor, and he was talking. He did the opposite argument to me. Quite interesting. I honestly don't mind.
Really? That's cool.
Yeah, that's cool. I've never died on any hills. Like, I've learned.
No. Look, I mean, and it's not. And anyway, at the end of the day, I mean, you know, there's so many religions. Which one's actually right? At the end of the day, I don't know. But, and you know, one of them is it Sam Arendell. Who makes a good argument that
Ricky Gervais?
You know, like I was saying, you know, Ricky Gervais. Oh, I love him, man. He's really good on religious stuff.
He'd be the fifth apostle.
Yeah. Who's the other one that Jimmy Carr?
Did
you listen to him?
Does he talk about religion? I didn't know that.
He knocked religion quite a bit. Jimmy Carr.
I find there is an evolutionary benefit of having God in the sense that, you know, like, as you say, it all leads us to conforming. There's also the concept of the bicameral mind. So it's not necessarily proven, but it makes an interesting idea where it's like prior to the agricultural evolution, our diet was different. We had less carbohydrates. And when you have carbohydrates, they say that the left and right hemisphere are more defined. When the more carbohydrates you consume. So the idea is if...
I don't eat carbs.
Well, there you go. Maybe that's probably why you're making illogical arguments. No, just kidding. So to be able to transfer between the two, you might have a visual and audio hallucination where it's really hard to differentiate between what's actually you're hearing and you're seeing, which could be a miracle. Which would be interesting if that was more of a hallucination than reality. But then also, religions seem to have a theme, you know, like resurrection, or Jesus seems to be a figure of sorts that's quite common. I'm wondering why. Okay. Why do you think it resonates with the human psyche, or there was it actually a man that impressed?
Probably.
What's your take on religion?
That existed.
Yeah, why are the stories similar?
Yeah, you mean that? Yeah, well, if you actually go into it quite a bit, and I got involved in quite a bit of that, listening to all these different arguments around it. And, you know, like interesting story, like the story of Noah, right, and the flood and the animals into the ark and all that. Now, apparently that story came and was told under other religions. Was it Zoroastrianism or something, which is way predates Judaism or Christianity? There was the story of the flood and the ark and all that. So that was actually a story borrowed from other religions that was then put in, you know, because it explained, I guess, some. So there has definitely been a lot of borrowing, I think, from different religions, you know, and Jesus, yeah. So, yeah. And I mean, a story like the ark, you know, that's like a classic thing. It's like, you know, that's told in the Bible as if it's like, you know, genuine. But when you think it through, well, it's going to be pretty hard to keep some lions, you know, with cows and sheep and on a boat for 40 days. And yeah, you couldn't even do that now. Imagine on the technology back then. You know, how would you manage that? You're 2x2 of everything, you know? There's millions of species we didn't even know exist. You know, no one knew all of those species, and it's a little bit. You know, then you realize, oh, well, that story's a bit far fetched to be literal.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. Yeah, so just all those things. And I guess, I mean, I suppose I was brought up a little bit fundamentalist in that you believe the Bible quite literally. Yeah.
So, what was the life so that was, like that under your mother? Like, what do you have to obey?
Yeah. Oh, well, I suppose you took the Bible literally in a lot of ways, and you know, I know, just the absolute word of God, you know. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, she wasn't like, you know, my mother wasn't like crazy about it, like, you know. Yeah, some of the stories could have maybe been meant a little bit, you know, not literally, but you know, but just figurative story. I don't know, but. But I guess that was basically the upbringing, you know. And I wouldn't say I was a strict religious upbringing, but I was brought up religious, and I went to schools that were religious. South Africa is a much more religious society than New Zealand is, and school was, and you had religious education through school. Yeah. So yeah, the one thing I suppose I did myth about religion, and I even do sometimes now, because it's lovely just to, when times are hard, to be able to just pray to somebody, you know? Say, oh, no, please, take this, and, you know?
And
That I miss a little
community.
bit because, yeah, it's like, oh, okay, let me just pray. Maybe God will help me, you know? But, the other thing, I guess, on the other hand, when you don't have a religion anymore, you actually realize that, you can't pray. There isn't an invisible man there who's going to come and solve it. You actually got to take some action yourself and take responsibility. It's not just going to happen, you know. So there's some positive. I guess it's hard when you go from being religious and being able to pray to not. So that's quite hard. Can be hard initially, I guess, because it can be a bit of a crutch, eh, the religion, I suppose. You don't have that anymore. But look, I got over that. I've worked with that. Yeah, so
How do you
interesting, my brother. Yeah.
go
Yeah?
interesting your brother, yeah.
No. My brother is very religious still, from that upbringing, really. And we have some very robust debates. Would be would be would be
Understand.
putting it mildly, really. Yeah. That he disagrees with my points. Thinks I'm going to hell, and anyway, yeah.
So that's quite an interesting
Sorry.
point you talk about. No, I mean, but like, if the foundation of your family centered around faith, you would have had to shed aspects of your family in a way in order to get to that realization. Like, how do you, is there a way to maintain cohesion?
Oh, yeah. Okay, it's not like my family have disowned me, you know. My father disagrees with me, and then I'll make some logical arguments to him about religion that he then can't really counter. And then he'll just go, well, I'm too old to worry about it. I'm not going to change my ways now. It's like, oh, well, maybe you're right, but I don't want to take that chance, you know. It's like, oh, okay. It's a bit like, what do they call it? What's the wager that they talk about? It's like, well, the consequences if you believe it. Oh, it's called somebody's wager. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Nah,
Where
but he wins. It's better for
the
him to
argument is
believe.
that like, take the chance of believing just in case it's right,
Yeah.
because the consequences of being wrong are quite bad. You're going to go to hell forever, and it's like, well, so, and then that's my whole argument is also, well, is that a just God who says you can just, basically, you can live a great life, but if you don't believe, you're going to go to hell. You can be a pretty bad person and do some pretty bad shit, and just before you die, you believe and you ask for forgiveness and you get eternal life and heaven. So it's like, well, is that justice? You get yeah, no, you're getting eternal punishment for temporal crime. But doesn't really. That's not really justice, is it?
Interesting. So on the justice front, because I actually believe in forgiveness, not forgiveness without action. So what's your take on just, is there, can people be forgiven, or are you like death penalty
Yeah, of
vibes,
course.
or like what's your
Oh no, I'm not a pro death penalty person at all. I'm a left wing liberal, really. So I'm
interesting.
pretty. That's why I'm not a Trump person. I would be. I'm not a communist or anything. But no, I'm definitely politically centre left as opposed to right. So I would be. So yeah, I'm certainly anti-death penalty and pro-choice. I don't think. Not anti-abortion because, I think the word. I mean, what's the word? I'm not pro-abortion because nobody's pro-abortion.
That's wild.
Because if you're telling them to have an abortion, nobody does that,
What's pretty
But
horrific for the
they say
girls?
you're pro-abortion, but which is a bad statement. You're pro-choice. You might be anti-abortion, but you're not pro-abortion. You're pro-choice. Not pro-people. I believe if you don't like abortions, we don't believe in abortion. Well, don't have one. But don't stop somebody else making their choice, because of your moral You know, so, and as far as death penalty goes, I think, you know, I think that there's a lot of reasons why people commit crime, you know, and it's not always just because people are bad, you know, there are some bad people, but I think the majority of criminals do it because of circumstances or because of some of your mental illnesses or mental, you know, I don't think anybody lives their life to try and be a bad person and to do, you know, we all try and probably, I think it's, you know, and that's a, maybe that's an evolutionary thing in that we're almost programmed to try and give ourselves, you know, we've had to collaborate and work with other people and get on with other people and socialize and be part of society and be part of a tribe, I guess, and fit in. And I think that's what most people strive for. But I guess circumstances happen in their lives that might cause them to do things they regret and, you know, upbringing and, you know, tragedies or mental health. And I think that, you know, the key objective should be around rehabilitation and to stop reoffending, you know, and to stop crimes happening in the first place. You know, I don't think punishing people is the solution to stop crime. And nowhere in the world where they have heavy penalties for crime do you find crime is actually gets better. Statistics, you know, America has huge crime penalties and incarceration rates, and yet they have much higher incidences of crime and violent crime than countries, you know, in Western Europe and that. And I mean, you take the Scandinavian countries, you know, where they look after their people in prison pretty well, and they have very low crime rates, you know. And I think by punishing people, like putting them in prisons and you're actually gonna breed worse criminals, you know, and worse outcomes. And yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, crime has to be punished and has to, but it's not so much about the punishment. It's about the rehabilitation and stopping it happen again. Because again, hey, it's a moral thing. What's best for the whole of society and what's going to have the best outcomes for it? So yeah, certainly, and I think forgiveness is you know, you take out the religious side of it, but just from a psychological point of view and a moral point of view and you know, your own well-being, if you hold resentment about something or towards somebody, you know, you have a bad outcome for yourself, don't you? It becomes your issue more than their issue. You know? I mean, there might be lots of people out there. There might be lots of people who listen to this podcast and think, gee, that's an arsehole. I don't like him or whatever. But it's not going to affect my life, is it? But if they're going to hold grudges and dislike and not forgive or whatever, or not tolerate somebody else's opinion, or that's going to be their issue that they're going to have to deal with, and it's going to affect them and affect their, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that a big part of healing is forgiveness, and I guess also part of society, you know, forgiving people and understanding why they've committed those crimes and helping them. And I think by forgiving and giving people second chances and give the likelihood that you're going to get a better outcome, that the person's not going to reoffend, is going to be way better, you know? So yeah, I believe in being, I'm not saying soft on crime, but I think, you know, compassion around that.
You're running for office.
I think also in society, I mean, it's important.
No. No, you've had your politician
again, I think
death.
In society too. I mean, yeah. No, I've done that. But I like my politics as a subject. And that, you know, and I also think, again, you know, again, for the whole social welfare type thing. You know, I'm a fan of the social welfare system. You know, I mean, you know, I come from a country that doesn't have great social welfare. And I think it's important that we do owe, whereas we're a society and nobody, you know, people talk about being a self-made person. I think that's a fallacy. I don't believe anybody's self-made. You know, Elon Musk can't even claim to be self-made because, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, who's, you know, it's his customers and the people who bought Teslas and the people who, you know, and the government who's just got money towards all the research and the, you know, nobody's achieved anything on their own, you know. I haven't been successful as a mortgage broker because of my own efforts entirely. You know, it's because I've had customers who have been supportive and, you know, given me a chance. And I had, you know, I was lucky enough to have parents who loved me and took me to a good school, and I got a good education, and I got a good job, and I, you know. So all these things play a role, and yeah, okay. So you know, obviously your effort gets rewarded a little bit because, you know, people might recognize it, but you know, and then you've got customers who have been good, and then they refer other people to you, and so it's not all your own efforts, you know. It's the whole society, and everybody's played a part in your own success, you know, and not everybody's necessarily had the same opportunities that same. So I think people who have had less fortune, you know, being less fortunate, I think we do all owe those people something, you know. And some people might have mental health, or they might have disability, or they might have, you know, not have the same mental capacity. Should those people just be then left to suffer and, you know, not have a good life and have, you know? So I think we all owe each other as society something. And if you're more successful in society, I think you, well, then you normally just contribute more because, you know, you're lucky that, you know, and that's your duty of care towards fellow humanity. Talk about morality, you know, that's morality. You know, it's you have to give back to society. You didn't achieve it by yourself. Society, you know, and if you're like, take for example, if you're the best sportsman in the world, right, in some sport, like, you know, well, number one, you didn't invent that sport, you know. If there wasn't that sport for in the first place, somebody hadn't invented it. If somebody hadn't made all the equipment that you have to use, if it wasn't televised, if it wasn't made popular, you know, you could be just as good at some sport that nobody's ever heard of, or you might happen to be really good at a popular sport like soccer, and the whole world knows. You know, you're making millions because you've got that talent. But, you know, and the person who's like really just as talented in something that's not popular isn't going to get anywhere. You know what I mean? So they were lucky that either happened to be born at that time and happened to play that sport, and it happened to be a popular sport, and there happened to be all the other support around it to make that sport popular, that people watched it. You know what I mean? So that person can't say, oh, well, I achieved this all on my own. Nobody did that, you know? It's the fact that they had all the fans and the thing, you know.
Yeah.
So,
well, just like this podcast, yeah, so, we couldn't have done it on our own. You need someone to talk to, but you've done a whole 51 yeah, minutes, you. Mate. So
Oh well, we have. Oh, good. Yeah, no, I'm talking absolutely rubbish. I don't know.
I don't know where it came from, but we did it.
Yeah. Sorry, I don't know what you wanted to actually talk about. Yeah, we got into religion and politics. We haven't talked anything about my business or mortgage broking. I don't know if that's
whether
people are interested in that or not. But
well, if you need a mortgage and you want to talk politics, hit them up.
yeah. Look, a lot of people who don't like my politics might not come to me now for a mortgage.
Yeah, or the opposite.
But at the end of the day, I tell everybody out there, I'm a good mortgage broker. Yeah. And that's rely on faith. Okay, I do my homework.
Cool. All right. Well, we're all finished now, mate. So thanks for coming on.
Okay.
There you go.
No, all good. Thank